And
thanks again to everybody that's read, helped us open a meeting, and I'd like to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. Particular welcome to any visitors for us with us this evening, and a huge welcome if there's anyone new that's coming to our meeting tonight. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to keep you coming back. And we do have a speaker tonight, and I'm going to hand you over to Christine, who's going to introduce them. Over to you, Christine.
Thank you, Steve. Yes, Claire, it's my fault. I suggested you to Steve. I don't know Claire particularly well, but I do know that she's been coming to our meetings pre-COVID, and she's recently started doing service for the Highlands and Islands group. So I've heard her share bits and pieces over the couple of years that she's been coming, but I haven't heard her whole story, so I'm looking forward to it. And I thought it was about time. So, Claire, it's over to you.
Thanks, Christine.
Oh, thank you, Christine. I'm going to have a call, Claire.
Hello, Claire.
Hi, Claire. Welcome. Hi, Claire. Welcome.
Thank you, Jim, and everybody else. And thank you, Steve, for thinking of me. I don't like to speak often, but I realized it gave me a chance to, you know, reflect and think about this whole trip of addiction and recovery. So it was because I like living in today, but it's important to me to remember where I came from, absolutely, because I can be a quick forgetter. Just on what's laid out in our basic text when it comes to the symptoms of our addiction and dealing with it through the steps to recover. And that's been, you know, just such an eye opener, and I like totally relate. You know, I've heard people say it, and I agree that I felt like that book was written for me. So I didn't know anything about addiction for a long, long time. And I'm a late bloomer to recovery, although I was not a late bloomer to addiction. It's very vast, but okay. So I grew up in the late 60s, early 70s. All right. So I remember, and I'm number three of four kids in my family. And, I guess it was like a typical family. I'm not sure what a quote typical family was, but there was three of us girls and one boy, right? So I was the middle girl. Still am the middle girl. So I don't know, I just kind of like was in the middle, right? And I remember like pretty early on having this like revelation that like, gee, my older sister, she's special because she's the oldest. And my brother, he's special because he's the only boy in the family. And then my little sister, she's special because she's the baby of the family. And, you know, and then it went out of my head kind of thing. But I don't know. I guess I dragged that around with me without even realizing it a lot of the time, you know. It's not like my parents even like treated us differently. But anyway, so there was that. And I believe I definitely was an addict way before I ever picked up. I believe like sugar was my first thing I was addicted to, because We used to have a sugar bowl on the table when we were kids that my parents used for their coffee. And I just remember, like, after my mother would walk out of the room, I would have a glass of water and I'd go to the sugar bowl and throw 3, 4 teaspoons of sugar in my water and drink it down real fast before she came back in the room. So, yeah, that was my first thing. So, the symptoms of addiction were there, the sneaking around and waiting for her to have, that exact moment when I could go use my sugar kind of thing. And that kind of like just continued. So I also think, like I had definitely had the symptom of like, which that was along with my disease. I was just like basically sneaky and entitled. I would like borrow my sister's stuff without even asking her. I just felt like, hey, she's got this, I want it, I'm taking it. Whether it was a shirt or a record or whatever, didn't matter. I just helped myself to it. Never even thought to ask first, And then I, of course, would get completely, mad if it was done back to me. Like, how dare they take my stuff? So, that I don't think is like non-addict behavior. I don't know. So when I was in 8th grade, we moved from one neighborhood to the other. So here in the States, my school went from first to 8th grade. So you graduate, after that year. So 8th grade, I'm thrown into a new school. And then it became kind of, well, I want to be accepted by, all these new kids in my class. And, I guess it's just because I'm an addict. I don't know, but I gravitated towards the other little kids that were causing trouble. And, started smoking cigarettes with them after school in our little Catholic school uniforms, on the way home. And anyway, and then when I hit high school, started, using, started smoking herb. I also gravitated towards people that were older than me outside of school. Like, I tended to hang around, with, I want to say family, because I had a lot of family, a lot of cousins. And I just tended to gravitate towards them, and they were already starting to use. And, of course, I gravitated towards the family members that are also addicts. So I learned a lot about using from them. So I pretty much used all sorts of substances, but it wasn't, it was like, weekends for the most part for the heavy duty stuff, but there was always constant, smoking pot before, during, and after school. I mean, that was a given. My dad, he owned a liquor store. So it's kind of ironic because liquor kind of like kept clothes on my back and food on the table. I really didn't have any interest in that. But I remember my father saying at one point, he said, because he could see I was like a budding, addict. I mean, he worked, like I said, he owned a liquor store and it was in a downtown area. So he knew all this, the symptoms of addiction. And he said to me, like, I don't want to see you even on that street. But he would let my other 3 siblings help him out at Christmas time, wrapping, bottles of booze that people would buy for Christmas gifts. They'd help wrap the boxes. But he's, when it came to me, he said, I don't even want to see you on that street. And I am the only, quote, addict in the family out of the 4 of us. But so, I stumbled along, not really realizing anything about addiction. And I got pretty good at fitting in, like chameleon style. I could hang with this group. I could hang with that group. I was kind of athletic. I could do, you know, some athletic stuff all throughout. But never really, you know, committing to one of the above. The only thing I committed to was like my friend that lived down the street that we would run around using together. What else? So anyway, it's hard for me to think because my brain is still pretty burnt. and that's a long time ago. So let me just jump ahead. So there was, you know, like I said, I grew up in the early 70s and in New York, just above Manhattan, about half an hour north. So I remember there were a lot of people, like I said, I gravitated towards people a little older than me, that people coming back from Vietnam that were like strung out, and some people I knew from the, you know, the parks I'd hang around in, that, you know, were doing heroin. And, you know, that was, oh, I'll never do that. You know, those people are junkies, you know, that kind of thing, and put it out of my head. But again, just kind of like was doing a lot of everything else. What else? So then I went to the dentist when I was like 23. I'd say I was about 23. And, you know, I had a tooth pulled, introduction to narcotics for the pain, and it was like, okay, this is it. So somebody's fighting something. Unless I'm echoing. So anyway, you know, I would run around the Bronx just buying pills off the street for several years. And I also, you know, had boyfriends along during that time, and most of them were into that as well. So that went on for a few years, but anyway, I don't know. I don't want to go too stupid into my addiction. I'm going to fast forward, actually. So I got married to my husband, who's a wonderful dude, and ironically his older brother was a heroin addict, and he ended up dying of AIDS, well, secondary AIDS, and I couldn't attend his funeral because I was in my very first detox from dope. So that was like just ironic, like I said. But anyway, so I got married and I got pregnant with my daughter, and we were married for a couple of years, and I was working at the time, and you know, he works also. But you know, so it got to the point where I would leave my job, you know, like at lunch hour, and run down to the Bronx to buy some pills and come back. So I was using, you know, before, during, and after, and that didn't work out. I ended up getting fired from that job. I had gotten fired from prior jobs too, from a different substance, but anyway, so I, when I got pregnant, I was like, okay, I'm not going to use. I was just convinced this kid was going to come out with like major birth defects from all the using different substances I had done over the years. So I was clean while I was pregnant with her. But, you know, again, I didn't know about the disease of addiction. And oddly enough, I had a couple of pills that I held on to the whole time I was pregnant, and when I would feel stressed out or just the urge to use would become overwhelming while I was pregnant, I literally would open the drawer and pick the bottle up and look at the damn pills and say, okay, I'll get to you in a little while. You know, and I just felt so comforted to know that they were still sitting in the drawer, which is like sick. And then after I had my daughter, I was still in the hospital, right? She was 2 weeks early, but she was, you know, she was fine. She was just underweight because she was 2 weeks early. But I remember being mad that they didn't give me any painkillers while I was, giving birth. But the doctor was like, well, why would you want it? Because I asked for it. And they're like, well, why would you want to do that? You'll just, you know, slow down the baby. Because I didn't want to hurt the baby. But, you know, they gave me painkillers right after I had the baby. And, you know, I hit that, you know, nurse button every couple of hours, knowing that I could ask and they were going to give it to me. And I remember, like, they brought the baby in. They carried her into the room, like, I don't know, the second day, maybe. The nurse went to hand her to me, and she looked at me, and I had my arms out, and she looked at me, and she could tell I was high, I guess, and she pulled the baby back, literally, right? And I looked at her like, you know, screw you, bitch, give me my baby. And, you know, when I look back at it now, it was like, ugh, the shape of things to come. But again, I was just insulted that how dare she, you know, this is my baby, how dare you? You know, it's like she started to give her to me. She looked in my eyes, and then she yanked her back. But so anyway.
Losing you. You're cutting out and coming back.
Okay.
Bit.
I was wondering, can you hear me now, Christine?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Yeah, I've been having internet issues all week. Geez. Okay. Well, so I stayed clean the first year my daughter was alive. I don't know if you heard that. But, and then the disease started talking to me as it likes to do. And again, I didn't know about the disease of addiction, didn't even realize this was a symptom, but it was telling me. My cousin, my older cousin, came to visit to see the baby, and he's one of the ones that I partied with years prior. He had a dope habit again, which he had stopped for a long time, but he started again. And he asked me, do you want to try some? I'm like, no, I do not. That's like the one drug that, you know, you're going to be a junkie if you do that one drug, right? But then the disease started talking to me, you know, saying, oh, you've been so good. You haven't done anything in a year. How different could it be than the pills? You know, just a little. So, you know, after about him being there for about an hour, I said, okay, let me try a little. Well, that was, you know, my disease, score one for the disease. And so that just kind of started that off. And I was 31 or 32 years old at that age, at that point. Like I said, with a 1-year-old baby. I fell in love with it and was sneaking behind, you know, everybody's back and using, not every day, but you know how it goes, just got worse and worse. And by the time my daughter was 2 and a half, it became quite clear that I was strung out. And my husband, you know, discovered I was using. I mean, I literally hid it from him for like a year and a half. And he was really freaked out because he had lost his brother, you know, like I said, to this. So I said, okay, I'll go get a detox. And I thought I was going to go in, I'd get, you know, physically detoxed, and then everything would be hunky-dory when I got out, and I could just continue, you know. But it didn't work out like that, obviously. And then I started dragging my daughter through my addiction. I'd bring her with me when I'd go to cop my drugs and put her in dangerous situations. I mean, left her in the car while I'd run into the projects. And, I was just lucky that she was still there when I came back. I put my daughter in dangerous situations. And this went on for, I don't know. Well, about another year, I'd say. I left her with people, like I would be one of these, I'll fly, you buy kind of things I had set up with a couple of people. So I'd leave my daughter with these people that I didn't really know well. And, I'd run down and buy the shit. And she would, they were like, oh, she cried the whole time you were gone. Well, yeah, I can see why now. She was petrified, you know. Oh, 13 hours a day. Uh-oh. Am I in and out again? Shoot. Yeah, this is not working good.
You're back now.
Oh, yeah, I feel so bad because this is not good. I don't know. Where the heck was I? Huh?
Your daughter.
Right. So, all right. I put her in dangerous situations. I don't know if you heard that. Phenomena. This thing is messing up. I keep saying reconnecting. I'm so sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, absolutely fine.
Oh, okay. I keep saying it, saying reconnecting. So when I had to go back into a detox, I said to my husband has started a new job. He was working 13 hours, out of the house 13 hours a day. And so I asked my brother and my sister-in-law to watch my daughter for a weekend. All right. So I could, I didn't even want to tell them I was going to detox, but, it came out that I was. I forget how they found out, but, here, I'm leaving you my daughter for the whole weekend. Like, where else am I going to be, really, I'm not going to some Mexican vacation or that. So I signed over temporary guardianship to them because they're like, well, if she has to go to the emergency room and your husband's not around to sign papers if she needs treatment, you got to do this. I was like, oh, yeah, okay. So I signed it over. So my daughter, again, I thought I would just get out and everything would be fine. But they, in their wisdom, were like, no, well, you do an outpatient thing. Because they did have outpatient at night treatment, and we'll hang on to your daughter so you can concentrate on it. I'm like, okay. That was all well and good, I thought, and I did try it, but I didn't last long. I don't know what the hell happened. And then it's like they didn't want to give her back, and then my disease did this. Well, if they're not going to give her back, then what's the sense of even trying to get clean? And I used that self-pity thing. I was convinced, what is the sense? I have no reason to be clean. So that kept me out there. I didn't even, I had no desire to even try to clean up. And my husband, again, he had a new job and he couldn't be there to pick her up. It was just unmanageable for him to do that. So he was at work all that time, and then I met a couple of people in the detox that taught me new ways and means to get more. All right. And I started running with them. And then, I started shoplifting every flipping grocery store in the county. And that went on for like another year and a half. And then, of course, I got busted after a year and a half because I was so strung out. And so, again, I got to the point where, like, I forgot the word, I can't think of it, but like, just, you know, I demand, entitled, there you go. I was entitled to go to your store and take your stuff. You know, how stupid are you to leave it out? What are you, stupid? You know, I mean, this is how I thought. So, yeah. I got caught shoplifting like three times in about a week and a half after doing it for no problem for a year and a half. So, again, entitled and strung out was what it was. So I ended up having to go into county, no, the state, what the hell was it? It's state of, the lovely state of Connecticut, Department of Corrections. And I did 9 months there. And it was basically living in a room with 56 other women because it was like minimum security, dorm style. So, you know, that was another chameleon setting. I was able to, you know, just, it was like, I could fit in with this group, I could fit in with that group, and such and such. You know, I got it through it okay, I guess. I knew I didn't want to go back. Not that much I knew, but it wasn't, you know, as horrendous as you'd see on in the movies or whatever. So when I got out, oh yeah, so let's see, my husband had left me by this point, okay, because he was not putting up with, you know, my, again, he'd come home from work and I was, you know, the house was a disaster, you know, whatever. I just was not doing anything a wife or mother should be doing, you know, nothing was done. So he up and left. Maybe he thought like that would snap me out of it too, but no, I was kind of glad when he left because now I didn't have to answer to him, you know what I mean? And I didn't have to sneak around and lie so much. I could just go do what the hell I wanted and come back. Well, that, you know, that didn't last long because then I got arrested again and went back to jail again. And I could have this like backwards time. It's all kind of blurry, but when I got out the next time, meanwhile, I still have not seen my daughter nor spoken to her. My brother and sister-in-law wouldn't even let me speak to her on the phone, which I thought was like ridiculous. But they were, you know, protecting her, I guess, because I mean, when I would call up and say I wanted to talk to her, I was always high, you know, and I guess they knew that. So finally, I don't know, I was living in this shitty place that I got sponsored out of by the YWCA when I got out of jail again. You know, that was not a good scene. I continued to use, learned even some more new ways and means to get more. And I was hopping in and out of cars. That's clear enough. But I really was getting, oh yeah. All right, so I really didn't see any way out. And then somebody, I don't remember who the hell it was, but somebody said to me, why don't you go on, you know, methadone maintenance? Because there's not a judge in this land, whatever they said, judge in town, that is going to keep you from your daughter, you know, if you're on methadone. I was like, oh, okay. So I did that. Plus, I was on probation and parole. And I didn't want to screw those up again. So I did that, you know, and again, just blindly, you know, and what's the other word? Just, you know, no thought process, just snap decisions. I did these things that had like real consequences. So I did get onto it. I was running with another girl at that time, and one of our regular friends, shall I say, be kind, let us stay at his house while we were waiting to get on, because it was like a waiting period to even get on there, like months. And he used to drive us down while we were waiting, and we'd hop out, and me and her would be running the streets, working the cars, running the streets, and then he'd come back and pick us up a few hours later, and then we'd go sleep at his house. And this went on for a while, quite a while. But we finally got on. Yeah. I remember it was like March of 96 when I got on, yeah, the program. And for me, it gave me a little bit of, I don't want to say sanity, but stability. I wasn't running the streets anymore. It was a big freedom to not have to worry about running the streets anymore. So for me, I just like lived in that gray area on the methadone program for 12 years, right? In that time, I was able to slowly get visitation back with my daughter. My husband got her back after a while, but it turned into kind of a long, drawn out court freaking battle because, he is he's a functioning alcoholic is what he is. He likes his beer when he gets off of work, but so my brother and his wife, they really didn't want to give her back to him, and he had to take them to court, all right, to even get her back. So it was hell for him too because of my addiction. He also had to go through this hell. But so I remember saying to my husband, "So can I come back home now?" Because I really did want to go home to him. And he said, "Well, no, let's wait 6 months because I'm still trying to get everything, settled here." He had to get my daughter back, like I said, put her in a school. She was in second grade by then. So I basically missed my daughter's life from 2.5 years old to second grade. That is a long time. So I waited the 6 months, and then I ended up, getting back with him. And he had it worked out, so he was able to get an apartment right across the street from my sister-in-law, who was the one that was married to my brother-in-law that passed away. But she was one, great. She would, he could drop her off at school. She picked her up at school and brought her to her house till he got out of work, right? This is during that 6 months time that I was waiting to reconnect. And then when I got back there, she went to a small Catholic school, and the principal was just the most beautiful person. Like, I felt like, oh man, she's gonna look at me like I'm a piece of crap, right? But she was really welcoming, non-judgmental. I guess she knew what was going on. I'm not quite sure, but she really helped me, feel like it's gonna be okay. And she even asked me after a while if I wanted to help in the schoolyard when the kids did recess, be one of the monitors. I forgot what they called it, but I'd stay outside with the kids during their play period and clean up the trays from their lunch. And I got such joy out of that, And she said to me, she goes, "Yeah, I think it'd be good for you because you are like you're like just like one of them. You're one of the kids." And I'm like, "Shoot, really?" And she's right, And I thought, like, now when I think back at it, it's like, yeah, I've heard that you stop growing emotionally like at the age you picked up. So yeah, I'm still like a 13-year-old that's in my brain at that point, Anyway, so I did get, like I said, some stability, and I was able to be there for my daughter during, grade school. I got a job again. I went back to school because the job I was at was at a college. So I got free tuition for a couple classes per semester for working there. Yeah, overall it was good, but you know, I had to go to the check in at the program. But I was just taking it as prescribed and doing well for like the 10 out of 12 years. And then the 11th year, I ran into a girl I ran with us when I was a teenager, who was also on the program. And she was also on the program. We just happened to bump into each other. She had another substance, and I was like, well, what the hell was that? And she said, it's like this. I said, I was like, oh, okay, let me try it. Well, so then I was like back to, you know, off to the races again. And everything started going to crap. And I remember when my daughter graduated high school, at the graduation, I was like so out of it that I barely remember the graduation. But and she went off to college. I almost got kicked off the program, but again, very quickly, what's the word, without thinking, you know the word, we'll be jumping to stuff without thinking it through. My husband's company was like, hey, we have another office in Ohio, you want to go out there? So, you know, we talked it over for a few minutes. I was like, yeah, let's go. Okay, let's go. And so when I came here, I thought I was going to transfer to the program here, but it turned out they wanted like three times as much to stay on the same program, and I'd have to drive really far to get there every day. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just tired of these. This would be a great time to come off. I don't know anybody in this town, you know. So I ended up like weaning myself off. And that was hell. I felt like shit for 6 months of physical hell, but I did it. What the heck? Then I went to visit back home. And, you know, I ended up picking up again as soon as I got back to New York. And then I stayed with my dad for a couple weeks, and then I had a habit again. So then I come back to Ohio, and now I got a habit. So then I just find out where to use here. I was using out here. But thankfully, I recognized, like, this can't go on, and, you know, I don't want to go back to doing all that stuff. So it was only about a year, and I checked myself into a detox because, you know, I understood that I know where this goes. So I finally checked in, got clean, did the outpatient thing, was clean for 62 days, and then my disease was like, oh, you're doing so good. I was always like, you know, this thought always popped back in my head. Like, you deserve this. You're doing really good. 62 days, geez. So, so I ended up using again. But I had started, I don't know, I forget, but quickly I got myself back into treatment, right? And then when I got out, I started going to meetings. And I got friendly with a girl in there, and, you know, she was coming to meetings, and we got friendly. And I don't know, I lasted 6 months, but I got my sponsor in that 6 months. And, you know, I did get a little taste of recovery. I was just learning about, you know, the disease of addiction. But after 6 months, I don't even remember what happened. All I just know is me and this girl ended up going out together, you know. I'm trying to remember. So me and her used for several months together, and then we were like, well, we got to stop this, you know, we got to stop this. And meanwhile, like, I was burning through like credit cards, and she was burning through, her father had died and left her money, so we were burning through her inheritance. Oh, it was bad. Lost my train of thought. Oh, okay, so we got to stop. And, you know, by this point, I didn't want to go back into treatment. I kind of had run out of any medical insurance coverage I had from the prior two times I was in there. So, oh, and my husband didn't even know I was using. Again, I was able to hide it from him, okay? And then, like, the second night we were detoxing, like, no, I called her the second day. I said, how you feeling? She said, oh, so shitty. I said, yeah, me too, me too. And the third day, but at this point, I kind of learned, you know, how to just like detox after coming off the methadone. Like, this is like, nah, this is nothing. But the third day, I called, went to call her, and her mother answered, who lived in another apartment nearby, and she said she had passed away during the night. And I was like, holy moly. So I don't know, and it really doesn't matter, like, what took her out. You know, again, I can just ponder about it till the cows come home. But bottom line is, she is gone. She was a beautiful friend, great human being. She is really like the light bulb moment for me, I guess you could say, you know, because it was like, well, you know, it was finally I could see, you know, I've done jail, I've done institutions or the detoxes, and a couple of court committed programs I had done in there also during those years. And the only thing left was death, right? And that's when it finally hit me. Like, it was just, she was like really close to me. I'd seen other people, you know, die as a result of this disease while in the midst of using, but they really weren't that close to me. And again, we had a little clean time together. So that was when I finally surrendered at the ripe age of 52 years old. So I remember one of the first meetings I went to, like a week after she passed. Me and her had gone to it together, and there was this guy there, he's a predecessor, and he said, oh, hey, how you doing? I said, okay. He said, oh, when I heard that Catherine died, he said, I thought it was you, because he always saw the two of us together, you know, whenever we'd go to meetings. And I was like, ah, no, it wasn't me. I still don't know why he said that, but you know, that really hit home too, to help. Because yeah, it could have been me, absolutely. So what time is it? Yikes. So like I said, I had gotten the sponsor. But you know, I don't know. I really, you know, I asked if she would sponsor me again, and I thought she was gonna say no, but she said absolutely yes. And then early on, she brought me to, excuse me, to wait, hang on. She brought me and another girl to a 12-step workshop. All right, they had up in Cleveland. So, oh, okay. Hi, Gene. And it's like an unofficial type of thing. I don't know if you guys ever heard of this. I had never heard of it till then. But basically, it was this predecessor who lived up there, that my sponsor, who is like 30 plus years clean, knew from a long time ago. So she's like, yeah, just it's a one day thing. So we go up there, and basically it was fantastic. It was an auditorium, and they took pieces of literature from the basic text and the how and why, and just put up blurbs. You know, we went through all 12 steps in one day. But it was just like a quick overview, you know what I mean? So, okay, we read the pieces of literature, 1, 2, and 3, and then 4. And then when it got to step 5, it was like little breakout groups. And just to do a mini, that's what it was, like a, do a mini step 5. Now, for steps 1, 2, and 3, this is how simple I had to do this program in the beginning. Step 1 was, after we read the little blurbs of literature, the guy that was facilitating it, he said, okay, so he said, do you admit, you know, that you're powerless over your addiction and that your lives have become unmanageable? Raise your hand if you think so. You know, I raised my hand, yeah, and, you know, I look around, a lot of my other hands were. He's like, okay, great. We're going to move on to step 2 now. Do you believe there's a power greater than yourself that could restore you to sanity? Now, I wasn't really sure what that power was. I just knew it had to be something. And I knew that I had learned about, you know, God when I was in Catholic school, but that didn't really work. But I knew that my sponsor was willing to sponsor me again. And that when I was coming in and out of those rooms for those, you know, over the course of 2 years, when I was in and out, I was seeing some of the same faces sitting at the table that were still clean, you know? So yes, I believe they are my higher power. You know, it was like, boom, I got it. And then step 3, okay. Didn't really understand step 3, but okay, I'm gonna, you know, yeah, I'm open-minded to that. And then, so then we get to step 4, like I said, mini step 5. So the girl that wrote up with us, also, you know, brand new in recovery, she kept saying to my sponsor, like, she started freaking out. Oh, please, I have to do the step 5 with you. Oh, please, please, please. You know, and I was like, well, okay, that's cool. You know, I was a little disappointed. I would have liked to have done it with her, but it wasn't like this girl was freaking out. So there was another woman there that had clean time and was helping with the readings. So she's like, yeah, I'll do it with you. I was like, okay, great. So I did a mini step 4 with this woman I had never even met before until that day, right? And I just did a couple of things about my mom and my daughter. And yeah, what else? I just remember those two things. And she gave me like such great feedback, solution type stuff that had never even occurred to me. I was like, oh, okay, this is good. You know, and we went back in after lunch. Lunch break, the little breakouts, and then we went on 6 and 7. Did not really understand that. 8 and 9, I understood that, but I, you know, I just was not prepared to even get near that. You know, thank God. I mean, I heard in one of those times, you know, the steps are in order for a reason, so I'm not going to attempt that. Plus, I had seen other addicts when I was in treatment. You know, they couldn't wait to apologize for every flippant thing. And I was like, I don't know if that's a great idea. But then when we got to step 11, this was the one that just blew me away. Step 11, it's like, okay, everybody just like, you know, like sit quietly for like, I don't know, 5 minutes. I can't remember the exact time, approximately, I guess. And just, you know, write down, like after 5 minutes, write down whatever thoughts floated through your head. You know, and so I don't even remember what I wrote down. But then everybody, like, read their thing, you know. And there was several comments about love and surrender and serenity, and love. And I suddenly like felt like, wow, this, you know, I really felt a connection to an even greater power than myself, you know, and I just walked out of there like almost like floating on air, man. It was a real beautiful moment for me, spiritual awakening, I guess. And I left out of there, you know, just with hope, like I said, and ready to keep working the program. I was excited, you know, to explore some more, you know, and again, I had found some hope. And all about the symptoms. Oh, Lord. Reconnecting again, huh?
You're good.
Okay. So I, you know, I committed to doing a 90 and 90. All right. So yeah, I did the 90 and 90, and I remember, I of course still felt like, you know, I can't trust myself. Even though I was excited to go to meetings, and my home group was morning 9 to 10 a.m. 5 days a week, and I remember, within that 90 days, I said to my sponsor, like, one time I said to her, like, okay, you know, after the meeting, I called her like noon. I said, I don't know what to do with myself. This was very early on. And she said, well, clean something. I was like, oh, okay, duh. You know, like, I just love the simplicity of how my sponsor works with me, because she realized that, you know, I just was using forever. I don't know how to do anything without using, so it wouldn't even occur to me. So yeah, okay, clean something, I could do that. I looked around like, yeah, this house could use some cleaning, you know. So little things like that. What the heck was I gonna say? There was something else I thought of, but of course it's out of my burnt head. So, okay, I'm doing my 90 and 90, and she had me work the fourth step, you know, in more depth. So within 6 months, I believe, no, it could have been within the 90 days, we did a fourth step, you know, a more in-depth fourth step together, and I was able to, you know, put down much more than I did at that workshop. And basically at the end of it, you know, it was, so what are all the common things of all the stuff you have? And I was like, well, let's see, I was using when this happened, I was using when that happened, I was using when this happened to me, and when that happened. So boom, you know, it became clear. Oh yeah, okay, right. Using. So to me, that was like to the best of my ability I could do. But again, it just suddenly became so clear to me that using was, you know, just the base of all my problems. And it really didn't matter where the hell it came from. Like, if I was born with it, or did I, you know, become addicted along the way, it didn't freaking matter. But so then she also suggested I'd start doing service early on. All right. Like, I really didn't, you know, trust women. To me, they were just like competition that I didn't want to deal with. You know, I felt more comfortable around men, cause I could, you know, have my way a lot easier around them. So she said, let's go to this meeting. It's a women's meeting. Okay, I go to the meeting. The chairperson says, well, this meeting is twice a week, and we could really use a chairperson on the Thursday. My sponsor's like, she'll do it. And at that point, it was like, ay, you know, I don't want to, but I'm listening to everything this woman is telling me, you know, again, that old, if you told me to stand on my head in the corner, I would definitely do it. All right, because I really could.
Losing you again a bit, Claire.
It helped me, you know, with accountability, which is something I absolutely needed to work on, because, you know, the disease, like I said, still liked to talk to me, but it was more of like, you know, you can't use because you got to chair that meeting on Thursday. And then I was also learning at that point how to, you know, just for today or just for this 10 minutes. I'm thinking way back now, you know, but really it was a minute at a time early on. And I would, you know, I understood that and I would tell myself, okay, I want to use, but, you know, like I would tell myself like, well, if you still want to use, you know, like by tonight, then you can use. Because I couldn't really wrap my head around you could never use again. Even though I knew if I used, I would probably die because I would be out on another run that would kill me. But my brain, you know, couldn't really set that up. So I had to say, yeah, okay. Okay. Yeah, I had to do all these little tricks because I understood I was understanding the symptoms of my disease. I'm so sorry. I spent all that time in active addiction. Dang, nabbit. All right. Well, suffice it to say, I've been in service ever since. You know, service has helped me learn so much about, recovery, just the principles of this program, you know, able to use the principles, understand when my disease is talking to me, and then I can apply whatever principle I need. I've learned and I've developed friendships, fellowship, sanity, just got some sanity. I remember a girl asked me like, geez, a year and a half after I got clean, if I would sponsor her. And I felt I was no way near ready to do that. But I said I would help her out because she was definitely suffering like I suffered. And she lived right near me and she didn't have a car and she needed a ride to meetings. So I was okay to do that. But, you know, she didn't hang around long, but she didn't last, but she was like so into, that's what it was I was going to say before, getting a job. And I was at that point too early on. My sponsor was like, I got to get back to work. I got to get back. I got to get a job, you know? And my sponsor said to me, your job is to stay clean. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, and I really took that to heart and, you know, it's still my job today. And, it's true. I mean, I am fortunate enough that I don't have to work. It's cheaper to live out here. And my daughter's, you know, grown up and out of the house. My husband makes enough to keep us both in food and clothes and heat. So I don't need much, you know. So my job is to stay clean and to continue to work on the steps and, you know, carry the message to the still sick and suffering addict. After that one that I tried to sponsor early on, year and a half, like it didn't work. I was like, it's not for me. I just really, you know, really enjoyed doing service. I did service for our area literature office for, you know, quite a while, volunteer. And then I was the vice chair, then I was chair, then we had our convention, we sold literature at the convention. That was awesome. And then when the pandemic hit, I managed to get our home group on the other platform, you know, and I hosted that for shoot 16 months. And again, it's 5 days a week. Still my same home group, still got my same sponsor. And I celebrated 10 years clean this past July. So is that 5 minutes, Steve? I'm totally lost.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. Thank you.
Oh, okay, awesome. Yeah, so that's it. And here I am today with all you lovely people. And thank you for saving my life when I broke my wrist pre-COVID when I first met you guys. I enjoy each and every one of you and really get so much out of seeing you and hearing your experience. Strength and hope. Yay. So that's all I got. Thanks.